Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Litzak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source grassroots community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. This show provides practical general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are its traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get notebook, paper, and pen to take notes during the show. First, let's look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. This week, I'd like to share a commentary, Avoiding the Fear and Shame of Foreclosure, by Gail Cunningham, who is the Senior Director of Public Relations for the nonprofit National Foundation for Credit Counseling. She says, when you sit across the desk from someone with overwhelming debt, you can sense their fear before a word is spoken. And when their home is in jeopardy, the fear fills the room. I was a credit counselor for 16 years and quickly discovered that people in debt are very ashamed of their situation. In all my years, I never counseled anyone who was cavalier about their circumstances or intentionally sought to dig a deep financial hole. But the shame that accompanies foreclosure tops anything I've ever experienced. There's something about people losing their homes that is disturbing beyond measure. Failure has become a part of their demeanor. After all, foreclosure is about more than the house and more than the money. It's about losing the dream, taking your children out of their school, and moving your family away from their neighborhood friends. Pulling up roots is never easy, particularly when you're forced to do so. The job of the counselor is to put the financial pieces back together, provide hope, and help people move toward a more financially stable life. Each day, housing counselors pick up the phone and advocate for their client, often going to the mat with a lender to achieve the resolution option that is best suited for that individual. For example, I'm reminded of the 46-year-old single mom's foreclosure problem that started with a heart attack. Out of work for 3 months, with no income and medical bills compounding her existing debt, she was headed for foreclosure. She and my organization were able to work out a loan modification that not only kept her in her home, but also reduced her monthly mortgage payment. Housing issues are complicated, with the terms short sale, forbearance agreement, deed in lieu, and loan modification foreign to the consumer. But such resolution options are still part of the day's work for the housing counselor, whose goal is to determine the best long-term solution for the consumer. Their experience allows them to talk the talk with the lender and achieve the happy ending that everyone is after. Each case is individual, with outcomes as varied as the problems, but avoiding foreclosure where appropriate is the goal of all parties. Foreclosure happens for many reasons, some of which are beyond the borrower's control. Economic hardship related to job loss, reduced hours at work, medical issues or divorce, unaffordable payments when a loan resets to a higher annual percentage rate, buying a house that was more costly than the borrower's income could reasonably support long term, and increased cost of living, which places more demands on consumers' budgets, forcing them to make hard choices about which debts to pay. Of course, the best foreclosure prevention tool is making an educated and informed decision when buying a home. Pre-purchase counseling is particularly useful for first-time buyers, helping them understand the full responsibility of home ownership. However, once it becomes apparent that buyers can no longer keep up with their loans, it is critical for them to reach out for help right away. Postponing dealing with the mortgage delinquency is one of the main impediments to solving the problem. Delinquent homeowners likely will receive a notice to cure default that lists HUD housing counselors they can contact, as well as hardship program options. They should seek help at once. Many resolution options, such as a short sale, which the home is sold for less than the remaining mortgage amount and the lender accepts at least part of the loss, are only open to those who have not dug a deep financial hole. These solutions do not preserve home ownership, but they are less damaging to the consumer's credit history, and depending on their structure, could possibly allow the consumer to leave the home owing little or nothing at all. When homeowners in trouble reach out to lenders, few know that they need to speak to loss mitigation departments and not the collection area. Once contact is made, buyers should be sure to keep records. Keep a log of the date and the time of each call, the person with whom you speak, and the content of the conversation. Ask questions and restate to make sure you are understanding information. Without accurate documentation, any dispute could turn into a he said, she said, with the homeowner being the loser. Don't expect a quick answer. Follow up with your mortgage company to make sure any paperwork you sent was received and logged. In many cases, getting a yes or no can take weeks, and weeks can feel like years when saving your home is involved. It seems as though new proposals to help consumers avoid foreclosure appear daily. Whether it is actions by Fannie Mae, the FDIC, or the lenders themselves, solving the mortgage crisis is recognized as an essential component to getting the economy back on track. Any resolution is likely to be as complex as the problem itself. Exotic loan products, combined with making them secure, are far different than yesteryear when we went to our community bank and took out a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage that it held the full term. Home ownership can still be the American dream, but only under the right circumstances. Lenders are turning to more traditional lending standards, and with good reason. Buyers are realizing that what seems too good to be true is often exactly that. America will find solid footing, but until then, many feel as though their home was built on shifting sands. Let's redefine financial success, and this time have it represent living within your means, being able to pay bills in full when the statement arrives, understanding the terms of a loan or credit card, knowing that there are things more important than hawking your financial peace of mind for a larger house or shinier car. In other words, let's begin living the true American dream, one of financial responsibility that is celebrated by all. It's a dream we can make come true, one household at a time. So that article is from Gail Cunningham, and the opinions expressed in it are solely those of her. And I would also like to add, as an attorney conversing with many of the issues that she raises in that article, that you often need to get independent legal advice because there are some legal results and ramifications. For example, if you do a short sale, you could get a tax bill, a 1099 debt forgiveness from the bank, which says that everything that they let go in terms of what you owed is now actually income to you, and you'll have to pay taxes on that. That's a scary thought, and yet that article does not really mention that at all. There can be some very serious downturns in your financial situation if you don't look at the whole picture and understand the different possible ramifications from moving one way or the other. Lawyers and legal accountants can be very, very useful in helping you look at your whole financial picture. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And now continuing today's show, I want to talk more about your savings plan. And while I start the show with a peek at what's going on in our economy, I try to then quickly bring it back to some opportunities, knowledge, and points for you to use in your life to make your situation much better, regardless of what's going on around you. And as always, I start out this section of the show by giving a very important credit, because the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work theories and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren from Harvard and her daughter Amelia Warren Tyagi, two of America's very great champions for debtors. And I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two Income Trap. You can also visit the archives of this show at www.kruufm.com. Go into archives under Life and Debt, and you can get the prior programs from this show, which are very, very useful in getting a full basis for what we are discussing in this show. And they actually have an ascending quality to them, so it's good to go back and fill in the points that don't always make sense when you're listening to this show. However, I try to make it so that the things we're talking about today can be picked up and used by anyone, regardless of whether or not you've kept up with this program. First part I'd like to go into now is a recapitulation of what we did last week, and we're talking, as I said, about savings. We have a formula that helps us to get back to simplicity and basics in our financial life and to cope with debt, and that formula requires us to take our net monthly income, so our gross income, into the household after taxes. That would be our disposable or distributable monthly income, should be broken up into three parts. And the first part was what we called bare necessities, and that's 50% of that amount for your basic must-haves for your life. The second part was for your wants, the things that were in excess of your bare necessities. And so there was 30%, which goes into your wants, and then your savings was 20%. And dealing with your savings in theory is something for the future, but in practice it's going to be something that you need for paying off a major part of the kinds of debt that you have encountered that is not your bare necessity debt. Would be debt that's for credit cards, some kind of medical bills oftentimes, personal loans, payday loans, things that are in need of getting wiped out in order for you to produce a future for yourself that is comfortable and you can actually have some wealth as a result, regardless of what's going on around you. What I want to discuss today is a review of what I talked about last week, the lifetime savings plan. And as you may recall, that there are four stages to that plan. The first stage is that you need to save $1,000 and have that as your security fund. Then you need to, in stage two, pay off all of your debt, and that's the debt that will eventually allow you to take your money in savings and apply it to the future when that debt is gone. The third stage is to build a six-month security fund, and I will go into some more details about each of these. And then the fourth stage is to create a wealth creation stage, and that has three components to it: to save for retirement, to pay off your house, and then to save for your other kinds of dreams. Now, going back and reviewing, when we save $1,000, that's how your plan starts. And you say, well, that's just $1,000. But if you have $1,000 in the bank already, you can just move on from stage one and go into stage two, and you're ready for that. But if you don't, what you want to do is concentrate all of your energy on getting really the first step in place here, and it may take a little bit of attention, but it is very important that you have this little security fund here. And one way to build it up, as Professor Warren and Amelia state, is that you can hold a garage sale, sell off sort of the excess things that you don't really need on eBay or on Craigslist, that kind of thing, CD collections. Even if you have to start saving some of your bottles and cans that you can get some money for, do a little extra work. And it's important to have this particular amount of money because it gets you a momentum along the whole wealth creation scheme, and it also gives you a jump start in your whole orientation and attitude, and that's extraordinarily important. And this is a security fund, and it's just in case you have to deal with something that is out of the ordinary without being a huge emergency, but something that you need to take some extra funds for to deal with. And that could be a number of different things in all kinds of areas of your life, but it keeps you from having to use your credit cards, which maybe you don't have anymore if you've been listening to this show, or going and borrowing money from any person, family member, or whatever, so you could deal with that type of situation. And it creates a cushion, and so you don't have any kind of fear that you're going to bounce checks or you're going to get paycheck deposited in time for your electric bill to clear the account. So it gives you that sort of cushion where you feel more relaxed about your financial situation, and then you don't have the late fees, and it's a very smart way to manage your money. But of course, the concept is you should always have at least a minimum of $1,000 in this account, and that's something that if you deplete it in some way, then you're going to have to pay that back, get it back up to $1,000, so you can have that cushion and that relaxation, and you don't have to be fretting about having to borrow money to get you by these little ups and downs in the field of money. That, in sum, is stage one. Now, stage two is the ability to start paying off your debt, that debt that you've had for a long time, from credit cards, from payday loans, from any source of usually unsecured kinds of debt that is there, it's haunting you, and it just seems like you're making minimum payments all the time and never really getting beyond the minimum payments. So now you have your $1,000 in savings, and so now you can focus on paying off your, what Elizabeth Warren calls, steal from tomorrow debt. And so you take that 20%, and you take all of that 20% that normally we would put in a savings account for tomorrow and put it towards paying off the debt. And following this personal debt repayment plan that we've constructed from previous shows. And it's an important principle to not really worry much about saving for any other kinds of purposes, and don't get too concerned about how long it's going to take you to get out of the debt. One day you are going to get rid of it, and you have to take one step at a time. You have to lay the groundwork on which you can start building a productive lifetime savings plan, but you can't really start that until you've dealt with your debt and had that whittled down to zero. If you are just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, Your Practical Debt Education Program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. And we're discussing your savings for the past and for the future. And now we're on stage three, how to create your security fund. And the concept of a security fund, once you have, first of all, your $1,000 mini emergency fund in the bank, and then you have paid off your debt, which is taking away from your future, then you want to create a buffer zone, a security fund, and this is our stage three. You've paid off all of your debt, and that's a huge, monstrous, phenomenal quantum step in your personal advancement. And so you have your bare necessities in balance. You have your wants spending under control. You're going 50-30, bare necessities, wants, and you're living really comfortably with that. And now you have to prepare yourself in case something big, not a mini bubble in your monthly financial situation, but something big comes up. So you have to have some kind of plan, a security plan, to protect yourself if that were to happen. So now you should start putting your 20% into a savings plan, which is a security fund. And this will go into an ordinary savings account that you can access very quickly. It is for personal defense needs in case something really, truly goes wrong. And as I said, you put it in a simple savings account. No fancy investments, no special tax breaks, no fear of having a penalty if you need to withdraw it. And it should be within virtually instantaneous reach, very easy reach. You keep it separate from your regular checking account so you were not tempted to take money from it for your non-emergency needs or circumstances, and you don't get an ATM or debit card for that account either, because it really is a hands-off kind of account, except in times of extraordinary need. And the reason for that is because if you were to get sick, if you were to lose your job, if the car conks out, the roof caves in, your furnace goes, some major basic reality strikes you that is extraordinarily unpleasant, you need to have that money there to access as soon as possible and to the extent possible. If you take a serious blow and you can't make your ends meet, you can turn to this account and then the crisis will pass and you can start building it up again. And it is a major cushion that you can use as a backstop for all problems in your life. So now you understand what it is, but how much are we talking about? Well, the general rule of thumb is to put into your security fund what you need to cover your bare necessities for 6 months. So you would go back and you would look at how much that 50% of your disposable monthly income is, and you multiply that by 6, and that is what your security fund would be. In other words, if you're needing from your disposable monthly income for bare necessities $2,000 a month, and that's what it works in your plan, then you need 6 times 2 is 12, $12,000 have to be put away. And that's $1 at a time until you have that as your security fund in case something really immense happens and you can sustain yourself on bare necessities level for shelter, food, basic transportation, all the things that you need for at least 6 months. And once that's in place, and it'll take a while, it could take a year, it could take a year and a half to get that done, but you don't have any more debt. You're not taking on any new debt, which is a major principle. Don't create any new debt. And so you can get through that security fund. It's there. And then you move on to stage 4, which is a lifetime of wealth creation stage. And the first point is that you want to create a retirement fund. And by retirement fund, we're starting to think about your golden years, saving for your golden years. And I'd like to quote, I find a very charming quote from Professor Warren. She says, "But savings for retirement? Okay, we've heard it before. Retirement looks so far away, and there are so many things you need now. And you like your job so much that you never want to retire, and you plan to strike it rich somehow, so there's no need to save for old age. And if you never ever think about retirement, you'll stay forever young. And if you kiss a frog, it will turn you into a prince." Now that's a piece of information for you. That's reality, and we have to deal with it in a very conservative way. We have to put our feet on the ground and start looking at the twister around us and find ourselves a quiet spot in the storm. And so you can't rely on these major optimistic things just falling as boons from heaven. You have to take control of your financial life. We've gotten you through 3 stages. Theoretically, you have to do it yourself. And now the 4th stage is really to prepare you and to enrich you for the remainder of your life. So retirement is an important piece in this. It's fundamental, and it's something you have to put some attention on. Just as a very prominent point in this, the government actually gives out a large pile of tax breaks at this point to help you save for retirement. Your employer wants you to save for retirement, and you have years and years now for your retirement account to grow, which means that a little savings will go a very long way. And as the Nike ad would say, just do it. This is very important. You have control over the action and maybe never ultimately over all of the exact results of those actions, but this is a correct action and it would be very useful and it will get you moving in the direction of having a comfortable retirement. And then there are some very solid statistics to corroborate this idea that you want to save for retirement. 1 in 8 older Americans live in poverty. That's point one. The average Social Security payment is about $10,000 a year, and there are not many places where you're going to be able to live on that comfortably. The group of elderly people are now the fastest growing group in bankruptcy, and when the experts, the economists, look at the future, they predict that today's workers will be a whopping $45 billion short of what they need to live on retirement. Okay, so that's like this show. I tell you the scary things first, and then I go into ways to deal with it. Same thing here. That's the scary statistics, but in fact, you have a possible way to deal with your retirement, and that's the happy thing. You can be financially prepared. And the basic life-supporting objective here is that when time comes, you can retire in comfort and dignity. You can have the money to cover your basic needs, money for your care, money to let you pay your own way. You won't have to go begging and ask for charity, and you will not need to work longer than you are physically or emotionally capable. And with some good fortune, it means that you'll have some extra money for your dreams, however you have constructed them. Once you're in the financial position to start savings for a retirement plan, then what you need to do is to sign up for a retirement plan at work. That's a very simple thing to do. Your boss has already done most of the hard work for you by getting the plan set up, so just do it. And then you get automatic tax breaks for every dollar you put in, so the government gives you an immediate boost, and many companies often match contributions, so you're getting some free money from your boss by doing this. Now, if you don't have such a job that allows you to sign up for a retirement plan, you can create your own retirement plan. Also, if you're a self-employed person, you have an individual retirement account, an IRA, a SEP IRA, or an individual 401k, which offers higher limits and extra tax breaks to small business owners. They're very easy to set up. You can speak to your local bank and or look online. You can make sure that you get low fees and plenty of investment options. And then once they're open, you just start contributing. And the IRA will give you great tax advantages. And next week, we'll continue with the fourth stage of the savings plan by paying off your home and saving for your other dreams. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptek, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.